Come in this room. Come touch me.
Oh, my God!
Touch. One of the five senses that helps guide us through our lives. It brings us warmth and comfort, like a newborn to their mother's chest. Or the pain and suffering until the very last moments death forces us to receive our final goodbyes. But what's after death? Is there the possibility of touch? If so, can we feel it? What does it mean when one is touched by these invisible forces, believed to be ghosts?
I think you're on the right path. I think you're at kind of a precipice where you can clearly show that humans have an experience that has an objective piece to it, which at the very least should get other scientists interested in looking at that question.
My whole research process is trying to bring in a more scientific basis.
People need to understand that this is not just your bells and whistles that you see on ghost hunting shows. This is real science.
This is a real thing that we're looking for.
It was here in D Block that changed everything for me and for Nick.
Hey, you in the corner here, touching people. You're out here. Ah. Really? Scratch me? Go on, man.
At the exact time that I was scratched, looking at the larger data set, you can see anomalies in the PIR and ultrasonic sensors. We can use that data to then create an animation showing what happened in approximate real time.
When dealing with the paranormal, you have to be prepared for just about anything when the spirits are truly the ones in charge. For the first time in history, our journey into this untapped realm has only just begun.
Welcome to Paranormal Gateway Short Talk. I'm here with Scott Wise, and our very special guest joining me tonight is Ross Allison. Ross is a paranormal investigator, author, media host, lecturer, teacher, and native tour guide. Ross has been lecturing for Power Performers since 2004 and has spoken to thousands of students at hundreds of colleges and universities throughout the United States on ghost hunting adventures and teaching his guests based on his book, Ghostology 101, Become the Ghost Hunter, at the University of Washington Tacoma Community College. His lectures have also taken such faraway locations as London, Canada, and Scotland. Tonight, however, he's talking about fearing the existence of supernatural physical contact, which led to his documentary based on this concept called Parasense, the Dedic Experience, where he focused his attention on the physical aspects of ghosts actually touching and living. His struggle to prove his phenomena takes a crucial turn when scientist and inventor Jack Gouin joins his team. They take naked subjects to the most haunted sites known for supernatural physical contact. For the first time in history, these encounters are being thoroughly investigated and exciting evidence is being discovered. So, further ado, let's welcome Ross to the show. Hey, Ross.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
That was awesome. Pretty good.
Yeah. That's an awesome trailer, though. I had to put it on there. If you didn't mind, I put it on there. I should have asked you first.
No, it's great. Anything to help people see some of the work.
Yeah, I'm always about sharing more. Let's see, sharing is scaring. I mean... I don't know, I'm not sure how long you've been in the paranormal. I've been about 25 years now. So, I'm sure my age, but, I know. I just turned 55 this year, yeah. So.
No, I hear you. I'm starting to show my age. A little gray coming in here, too, so.
Oh, I got the grandpa thing here, but I'm not grandpa. I just got the gray horn. I have to get some of my pro cream or something. So let's start off with what got your interest in the paranormal? Was it some kind of experience you had?
Well, it's kind of odd because what got me involved in the paranormal was my mother. I was very much intrigued by the stories that she would tell me as a little kid. And I just grew up fascinated with it. And when I got involved in the paranormal field, I was kind of the odd man out because most people back then were in the field of paranormal research because they had experiences. And I was just kind of envious of all these people that would tell me their experiences, you know, living in a haunted house or whatever, you know, drew them into it. But I was always surprised to find that there weren't very many people in the field that had not had experiences. So me, I was, like I said, the odd man out when I, you know, didn't have those experiences to go on. I was just, you know, still learning myself. So for me, it just came from that passion of hearing all those stories and just that curiosity. The do people really experience this stuff? So that's what really got me into the paranormal. And then basically, I had moved away. I had lived in California for a while, and I got to work with a lot of the big names out there. And when it was around 2000 when I moved back to Washington, and of course wanted to continue to do ghost hunting, but ghost hunting wasn't a big thing. You know, people did not, you know, think that, you know, ghost hunters were, I guess, cool, you know? So it was a situation where I decided, you know, if I wanted to continue to do this, I kind of had to do it on my own. And I started the first and oldest paranormal group in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, the rethought. It's just about, I know you were on a lot of shows and everything, but when you took it to the way you started with your experience stuff, what do you think now the role media plays nowadays in perception of paranormal?
Oh. You realize this. You opened that can of worms, right?
Yeah, I get every boy that question.
I know. You could do a whole show on just how the media's portrayal of the paranormal. It's, you know, for me, I have been in this field for, you know, over 30 years. I've been on all the shows. And I've even been cut from shows, and I've even been offered television shows. But it's a situation where I was more focused on maintaining the credibility. And people tend to forget that a lot of these television shows do tend to focus more on the entertainment value.
Aww.
You know, the scare tactics, and they'll do whatever they can to manipulate the audience and even the ghost hunters. You know, I've been on shows where the production crew purposely manipulates the ghost hunters to believe that something paranormal happened. You know, so there's a lot of that happening as well, you know, just to keep it authentic for the ghost hunter that they're filming. You know, they'll fake stuff in front of the ghost hunter, and of course they don't know that they're being, you know, fooled. So there's a lot of stuff like that happening as well. But it's tough because, you know, when I started to do Parasense, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to be, and I think it's so important to be as transparent as possible, and letting the audience know that this is legit. This is not the magic of editing. This is, what we really are, you know, trying to get out there and help people understand that there is something to this. You don't have to be manipulated by, you know, the production crew or the talent on the show to convince people that there are ghosts. I just wanted real answers, you know? And so for me, that was a big challenge as well, because I've always been afraid that the audience was too far gone. You know, they watch all these cookie cutter shows, the same thing over and over again, same places pretty much, just different team. And it's just, I was afraid that the audience, you know, is expecting something that they're familiar with when they watch all these other television shows. And then they get, you know, handed this, you know, Parasense and Naked Experiments. And it's like, wow, this is different. It's different in so many different ways. So I was hoping, and I still am hoping, that there's an audience out there that will accept what we're doing and understand, you know, the importance of the science that a lot of shows lack in, you know, bringing to a lot of this, these ghost hunting shows. So I know it was a long answer, so
Right, no, not true, because I was just saying that my group I was with for those 12 years, we were first approached by Discovery Channel to do a show of our own, but we told them that if you expect us to go see vacations and we go through a night and nothing happens, we won't be able to put that on too. You know what I
Right.
mean? Not just everybody gets them retired out. That's bullshit. It's not true.
Oh no, and
So I mean, we got lucky a lot,
no,
but
and it is very misleading, you know, when people watch these shows and it seems like every episode something amazing happens. You know, things are being thrown at them at every episode, and I'm just like, you know, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and the amount of, you know, scary things that I could say, I could count on one hand, you know, and that's probably doing over 800 investigations around the world. So it is very misleading.
I never had an experience. I think that's what got me intrigued. Because when I was, say, I was growing up, when I was in the high school, I was back in the 80s, they have people left the computer and stuff. They had to go to the library to get the stuff. And one of the first books I actually approached out initially was Hans Holzer.
Oh, I love Hans Holzer, yep.
That I got into his stuff. But that Nick book I take out, I would. Back then, they didn't have much of that. You know, pure psychology, when my, I mean, there was some, but not a lot on that topic. And go up and ask the library, do you have anything on this? Yeah, anything? I think, wait, what's that? They're going ghost hunting? And
Right.
they kind of look you across their head like, well, no.
Now, I got in trouble because as a little kid, you know, fascinated with the paranormal, I was one of those kids that would check out all the paranormal books and I would fail to return them. And so, you know, I'd always tell, you know, my mom, you know, I lost it, you know, and she'd be mad because, of course, they'd have to pay for the books. But that's how I started my, you know, ghost hunting library is books that I unfortunately that I took from the library just because I was just so fascinated with them. I didn't want to part with them, you know.
Think one that, yeah, if you heard to Carl Jung, I think I actually forgot to share his, and I have for 2 years. Okay, it has been about $50. Oh my God.
No, I know,
So
I.
I was sure that I should have just bought the book. It's no probably cheaper.
No, it
But
probably would have been cheaper to buy the books from the store,
yeah,
but you know,
yeah.
buying
But
books back then wasn't
oh,
that easy either.
get on the airline. Yeah, back then, I have to admit that I was interested in that. I have to say that Ghost Hunters actually got me interested in it. And some shows, there weren't for that. That's the people want to do it at all. But I think there's groups out there that go out there. I have fun doing it. That don't get it wrong. We have ball. We carry on sometimes too. But no, we're serious too when it comes down to it.
Right.
Especially if we when we have clients, you want to make sure that you get the stuff back to them in a timely manner. And but yeah, and I was with the group that got into it, so I started another group, and I was with it for 13 years now, but.
Right. Well, this, you know, the thing is that I find that's challenging with the paranormal field is that, we have a situation where there is no standard protocols. So right now, you know, it's everybody's kind of doing their own thing, ghost hunting. And it's harder for us as a community to validate each other's evidence because you don't know how they collected that evidence or, you know, how serious they are or if they're even making stuff up for attention, which is common nowadays. You know, a lot of these YouTube channels are, you know, making up a lot of ghost, you know, experiences just to get hits and subscribers, because that's how they make their money. And so, right. Unfortunately, it really does damage the paranormal field. And I've always said, you know, if we could just come together and have a standard when it comes to ghost hunting, we would be able to not always have to second guess anybody else's evidence. Because if they followed protocol, then we would know that they at least did it correctly. Right. So it is unfortunate, you know, that it's right. like that we can't unfortunately come together because there's far too many egos in this field mm-hmm. because, you know, somebody out there believes they know it all.
Right.
And we're just not going to be able to get ourselves any further right now because right. it's kind of like we're stuck in this loop.
Yeah, well, I'm still learning as you go along. You know, right. nobody's perfect when it comes to field and nobody knows all. When it comes to this field.
Oh,
that's why I try to do this, you know?
Right. And I'm happy to acknowledge I don't know it all. You know, even in Parasense, we talk about, you know, we're still learning. Me and Chad, you know, we want to come together on a level basis and say, hey, you know, we're going to take this step by step, do it correctly, and see what we find. And we found amazing things when it came to Parasense. And we're still learning and exploring new things. You know, I'm still out there doing these experiments and getting some interesting readings that I can't, you know, say. I can't say, yes, it's a ghost, but I can say definitely this is interesting. Could this give us some more valid, you know, evidence that there's something to this? Hopefully. We just need more data.
All right. And another thing I get cursed is Photoshop. Photoshop is a killer. You never know nowadays. Or even with, there are ways you can tell if a photo is meant to be a way. If you get some kind of a exif data program, sometimes mm-hmm. you can tell if more than one program touched that. There's a lot of them out there. I'll tell you when it was taken, what camera it was, the time of day it was. It was last in Photoshop. It was last in, you know, whatever. And you tell that way. But a lot of times you look at it and just say, duh, you know. So I had the ghost app or something. Like, what? Come on, guys.
The apps are the worst.
Really?
Don't get me started on that.
or even this group that had. Yeah, group that showed evidence of their ghost. They had their Bachelor's Grove ghost. That's their picture.
Oh, yeah. No, people don't realize that a lot of these devices and ghost apps and stuff like that are manipulating the ghost hunters and the audience as well. It's, you know, very unfortunate. You know, you got apps out there that will, you know, say ghost camera. And when you take pictures, it purposely puts ghosts in your pictures. Or yeah. even apps out there that are, you know, for EVP, recording EVPs, and they purposely put ghost voices in your recordings. You know, right. So you got a lot of that. There's even apps out there that are, you know, supposedly EMF detectors, and they purposely give you false readings, you know, to make it right. exciting. The problem is we're dealing with a lot of smart technology. You know, as the technology gets smarter and smarter, you're dealing with, you know, like right now, Hollywood's dealing with AI technology, you know, probably putting people out of jobs. And it's right. so easy now with that technology to manipulate the ghost hunters, because the technology could actually be responding to you in an intelligent way that would easily make it, you know, so simple to think that it's a ghost when right. it's the, you know, the program that's, you know, right. talking to you right now. You know, you've got Alexa and you got Siri that you can ask questions to and you get answers. The technology and a lot of these apps can do the same thing.
Right.
You know, it's very unfortunate that that's what we're up against. And you know, the thing is they do it on purpose because they make money off of it. You know, right. if you've got an app out there that's going to give, you know, the ghost hunters and the people for fun, you know, hobbyists, you know, ghost hunters, they're going to take it out to a haunted place and, you know, think they're talking to a ghost, people are going to buy it up.
Right.
You know?
Well, it's good that I have a headphones on. When you said the A word, Yeah.
Oh.
I have her over here, so she'll call nut. I got that all time.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's the thing. That's, you know, some of the things that the challenges we have to overcome, and that's why it's so important that people don't rely on a lot of those devices as proof to the paranormal.
Okay.
You know, it's, you know, we got to go to the simplest devices, like we did with Spectre, the Spectre system. You know, we just need to read the environment. We need to understand what's happening with the environment. You know, is there temperature changes? Is there a barometer? Is there changes in light? Is there some sort of motion going on that we can't see? It's all those kind of sensors that we need to help us understand what's happening in the environment, because there is no such thing as a ghost meter. There's no meter out there that's going to tell you, yes, you have a ghost in your room.
Right.
You know, I wish there was. I really do, because it would make ghost hunting a lot more fun. But we have to depend on devices that just help us to understand the environment and what happens to the environment when these oddities occur, when we have these experiences. That's what we need to go back to.
Right. And I'm trusting in my digital recorder and the camera and video camera. That's always all I need. With the sensors too, we put around, you know, like kind of set the EMF detectors and stuff. We'll put them around too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other stuff, that we don't really, and I get a lot of stuff on EVP just doing that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, video's great, audio's great. You know, if you want to have EMF detectors, that's great too. You know, temperature is always great to have. So I always love the basics that we started out with back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But Barbara said hi.
Oh, hi, and, Mom.
It just says pets now. The pets do now, because I know I have a female here. I think she followed me from the last place, but I don't mind she has Millie. I mean, every once in a while something gets knocked over and a big deal. But one of my live shows, I have windows over here but curtains, so we can't see outside, so there's no windows here. But I caught a shadow dart right behind me. And I'll have to show you that one after the show. I'll send it to you. Sure. I replayed it in slow motion. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've had that question come up a lot, you know, when it comes to pets. And I kind of question the fact, you know, is it, you know, because some people like to believe that pets are psychic or sensitive. But there's also people don't understand is, you know, pets, you know, animals see and hear differently than we do. So there could be something to that as well. You know, a lot of people have asked, you know, why some animals react to, you know, oddities in the environment. And I think they could be seeing and hearing things that we just can't. But another thing too, that I always have to remind people is sometimes, you know, if an animal such as a puppy is brought up in a place that's haunted, a lot of times they won't respond to paranormal activity because they're used to it. It's almost another person in the home. You know, it's usually animals that are brought into, you know, into a new environment that tend to have more of those interesting reactions.
I think I was thinking of parents that people overlook is the imaginary friend, too. I think the kids can also sense that. Where's Paul's on that?
You know, and again, it's the same situation where, you know, kids are a little more open-minded. Mm-hmm. They have more experiences with the paranormal because there's not that conditioning hasn't happened. And when I say that, a lot of people don't seem to understand is a lot of times when children have paranormal experiences and it triggers fear, because the kid doesn't understand, you know, what's going on, you know, why do I see, you know, this ghost and it scares me. Parents who don't, you know, like to see their child frightened, and, you know, I don't blame any parent, you know, you're going to want to console your child and say, no, 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 there's no such things as, you know, ghosts. There's no such thing as a boogeyman. There's nothing on your bed. There's nothing in your closet, because no parent wants to see their child frightened. And so that's what I think starts that conditioning. You know, you start to convince your child that they're not really seeing that, that that doesn't exist. And so I think that's a big mistake that some parents, you know, can make. I think what you need to do is, you know, but then some parents just don't believe in ghosts at all either. So, you know, that could also trigger that, you know, conditioning as well, that they're just going to grow up not believing in ghosts.
Right.
You know, there is some psychology to that.
Yeah. My son was the same way when he was younger, that he saw somebody in this room stuff that he talks to and stuff. But, yeah, it's a talk up there. There's nothing going on really, and he's, you know, being. But all kids do. I'll have one, but who knows? I could. Yeah, back then. Because a lot of people get made kids to see that person as a real person, say time.
And I think the best thing to do when you're dealing with that situation is get the kid talking. You know, get them to, you know, draw, you know, what they see, and have a better understanding of what they're experiencing. Getting them to, and then to help them understand that, you know, a lot of times these these experiences that they're having is not meant to frighten them, you know, especially if they're seeing another child, you know, a ghost of a child. Sometimes that ghost child just wants to play with them, just wants to have a friend. And so you try to get them to maybe talk about it.
You see, as your mom said, I thought it was just to make friends with him, back to sleep.
I don't think we never grew up in a haunted house, unfortunately, so I never had a lot of those experiences. My mom could tell you ghost stories, but I actually didn't have any of those experiences growing up, unfortunately.
So what were some of the earlier experiences you tried and what were the results?
So what were some of the earliest experiences I've had?
Experiments.
Experiments.
That you tried, yeah.
That I've tried? Well, I've always, ever since I've been doing ghost hunting, I've always been one of those people that was always thinking outside the box. Because, again, you know, I was doing this before the ghost hunting shows. So we didn't have the influence of, you know, what was featured on the newest episode of Ghost Hunters or Ghost Adventures. So me, it was always trying to come up with new experiments. And I've always been more scientific in my approach. So when we talk about, you know, the spectre system, you know, that was something that I was using. The basic concept of spectre was something that I was using for over 20 years. And it was just, you know, using scientific gear to take a bunch of sensors and produce a graph and let us know if there is any changes in the environment. And this was all about, you know, monitoring locations where nobody was in it. So no one could actually give us any false reading. So you would set it up overnight in a room, and you would just see if anything would happen in that room. Of course, there'd be cameras in there too to monitor any visual disturbances, you know, audio in there for, you know, any audio. But I would just basically, my main focus was, again, having a better understanding of what's happening in the environment. So, you know, I'm taking those temperature readings, EMF readings all night. I'm taking, you know, motion. I'm taking light. You know, and sometimes they even set up batteries and put detection on that to see if there was any battery drainage. You know, there was kind of experiments that I would do to see if they were responding. Because sometimes, you know, a lot of ghost hunters are all about experiencing the phenomena for themselves. And sometimes you have to understand that sometimes these things are happening even when we're not in the room. And I think a lot more experiments need to be done in more of a controlled environment where you don't have investigators influencing or contaminating the environment. So I was doing a lot of that, a lot of controlled experiments. And I was definitely getting some interesting readings with a lot of that. Let's see, I'm trying to think of some other experiments that I would do. You know, using the back in the day, we were using strobe lights because that lights would illuminate some of the phenomena.
That's before the grid then.
Yep. You know, and also too, we were doing a lot of experiments to try and prove and disprove, you know, the orb phenomena, because mm-hmm. I came into this when orbs were just starting out.
Right.
Orbs was not a big thing when film cameras were around. You know, a lot of mm-hmm. people were not submitting that as evidence. It wasn't until digital cameras came about. And mm-hmm. I remember I was excited, you know, with every little orb that I got in my pictures until we started to do more experiments and realizing mm-hmm. that a lot of times this was dust that we were capturing. You know, so a lot of that was just learning and educating and doing my own experiments and realizing, wow, this is not paranormal. But don't get me wrong. There is the orb phenomena.
Yes.
It's
yes,
just I not agree. As common as, you all know, right. most people want to, you know, validate as proof to the paranormal. So I've always, you know, came up with different experiments that you could do to try and validate a true orb. And one of the experiments we did was we had four individuals, one in each corner of the room, and they all had the same camera, and they all aimed their camera to the center of the room. And I'd say, okay, everybody take a picture on the count of three. You know, you count one, two, three, and everybody take a picture at the exact same time. And of course, you know, dust is going to mm-hmm. basically be in front of each of those cameras. And so to validate in a true orb, you'd want to find that one orb that's going to be in the exact same spot in all four photos. And you weren't always able to do that because, you know, the dust of the dust factor. But there was a couple times where we were able to, you know, out of hundreds and hundreds of photos, probably even thousands, to be honest, because we did that experiment every time we were out there investigating. So out of thousands of photos, you maybe came across two or three that had that phenomena where that orb was in the exact same spot in all four pictures.
Right.
So that to me validated, you know, that the orb phenomena was there. It could be captured. You know, I saw orbs with the naked eye. In fact, my mom was with me the first time I saw an orb. We were investigating the Imclaw Cemetery. And we were out there one night, and I saw an orb, you know, float right across and go right behind a tombstone. And I saw this with the naked eye, you know. So some things like that, you know, just prove that there is something out there, and you just have to try, and it's all trial and error to try and validate those experiences and try to find ways of capturing those experiences.
I'm a lot of Facebook sites for haunted stuff, and people always post pictures of all these orbs, and I started spraying the dust. I basically cussed out. Yeah, you know, they just do them, no, it's not. And I said, well, why don't you do an experiment? So why don't you go over, turn off the lights in your house, get a flash camera, go over and smack the couch really hard. And take a picture and see my ghost shabby around.
Exactly. Yeah, it was just simple things like that that you started to be able to prove the dust factor. But then you got those people that can tell you, oh, I can tell a real orb from a dust orb.
Right.
No, you can't. Because, you know, people want to say, oh, it's, you know, because there's color. I'm like, well, you know what? Dust comes in different colors as well. You know, it depends on the particle that you're capturing can reflect different colors.
It's a refraction too.
Exactly. Yeah.
So also, the people can see faces in orbs. Mm-hmm. Pareidolia, that's all it is.
Yep.
So yeah, like you said, there are. I think true orbs and short ones. That's over the last 15 years, I've never called another one that we refer to short. I actually said that to you if you want to look at, but that's the only one that we ever, in all these years we're doing it, because they wanted to sell on camera.
Right. Yeah. No, so, it's a lot harder to, get enough evidence to validate what you believe could be a true orb phenomenon. Unfortunately, there's far too many elements that produce false orbs. And so that's one of the reasons why, for me, I kind of don't use orbs as proof for the paranormal. Too many false, elements out there. So it's just something I just kind of put on the back burner. And hopefully, as we continue our research, we'll come up with new ways to be able to detect a true orb, orb putting off? Is there EMF to it? Those are some of the theories,
And not airborne particulates.
Right.
That's not real. But okay, I guess we got our orb thing out of the way here.
Yep.
As you do. But other guests have different views, and I just go along with it, but you gotta see what I think. That's how I feel one for. I had a lot of team zone, and there's some photos I saw that are kind of okay, but a lot of that. I'm like, okay, whatever, But right. Do you want to walk us through the development process of your spectrum?
Well, as I said, it was something that I had put together over 20 years ago. I had been trying to find ways. What I was trying to do at the time was I wanted something to measure the environment. We were so dependent on EMF detectors back in the day. And in some cases, some people still are. And I knew that there was more than just EMF. There's a lot more to the environment that we have to understand, and of course temperature was a common thing as well. And as I said, I also wanted to know, was there something out there that could just help, that could just be running throughout the night and monitor the environment and let us know if there's anything happening? And so I was able to track down some, and this was just like school science equipment, for students to actually, use in class, to measure, weight and to measure distance and to measure, all kinds of different things in the environment. And so it started out with that. I was just, taking a lot of these devices and I was using it to measure the entire room. And the nice thing about this equipment, it was producing a graph and letting us know, if there was changes in the environment, temperature, you could see, through the graph if the temperature was going up or going down throughout the night. It was tracking motion as well. And so we had a lot of interesting results with that. And so for me, that was just, and there was a few episodes too. And that's back in the day too, when I was up for a television show and they wanted me because at the time, I was the only one that was really trying to pursue more of a scientific, basis. Let's see. I'm trying to remember what year that was. But anyways, early 2000, I think it was around 2002 or 2003. It was way before Ghost Hunters came out. And that's when, you're dealing with a situation where, they wanted, more results. And I couldn't give them the results. They expected that at the time, the producers and directors, were expecting, results every time we went out and ghost hunted.
All right. Yeah.
And I knew, for being doing it as long as I have, it's just like, you don't always get results. And so they were just like, well, this is kind of boring and moved on. But that's the type of situation I was dealing with, is that, you know, I wanted to have results. And you don't always get results every time you ghost hunt.
No.
So I've, and then to continue on, you know, I just kind of took it from there, you know, and I was using that system for, like I said, 20 years. And then I actually got to meet Chad. Now, me and Chad's story is interesting, because Chad was doing a science talk radio show, and he was doing a show about fear. And so he thought, oh gosh, you know, let's have this ghost hunter guy come on and talk about, you know, scary stuff. And it was great. You know, we really hit it off. And he was telling me about some of the ideas that he thought would be kind of cool for ghost hunting. And I'm just like, yeah, that's great. And I was sharing my ideas, and we really hit it off. And we had talks about, you know, trying to, you know, produce some of this stuff. But he ended up, you know, because he's got all kinds of things going on, many, you know, pans on the fire, as you'd put it. So we never were able to reconnect. And I'd actually done a couple shows for him. I think I did a Halloween show for him as well. And so I ended up, what happened was, I basically was called in to do an investigation where a young man had experienced in an old brothel where something groped him. And he kind of felt that this, you know, entity, whatever it was, had followed him home as well, because he started having these sexual encounters with this, you know, whatever it was. And this had not been the first time I had been contacted and told, you know, similar stories like this. So for me, it was just like, okay, you know, it's interesting, but this was just all his personal experiences, you know. And you know, when you're talking about, you know, being violated in a manner where, you know, something's constantly groping you, it's, you know, it's a situation was like, well, you know, I guess I kind of have to take his word for it, because this is a situation where it's his personal experience. And it really got me thinking. I was just like, you know, there's been so many encounters out there where people have been touched. You know, you probably had that experience yourself. I've had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not always, you know, in a perverse way. It's a lot of times it's a very positive. Sometimes it can be in a very negative way as well. But a lot of people in this field have had those experiences. But in all honesty, it's your own personal experience. And people just have to take your word for it. And me, for whenever I had those experiences, I would always second guess myself. Because, you know, I'm wearing a shirt, I'm wearing a jacket when I'm investigating. And I get, you know, and I feel that tap on my shoulder. And I'm just like, was it a muscle twitch? You know, was it the jacket? You know, did I brush against something?
Yeah, if you would write the curve, go back to that open.
Yeah, you know, so it was something that I'd always go, did I really get touched? You know, was there something there? I'm not sure. And so I really got to thinking, it's like, how do you, you know, try to prove those experiences? And so I started doing all kinds of research. I, you know, started going through all my books. I started, you know, looking online. I wanted to find out if there had been anybody out there that had ever done experiments in trying to prove touch. And to my surprise, nobody had. There was nothing out there that had ever been published that, you know, validated or tried to validate these types of encounters. And I was just like, okay, is it possible that I'm the first to actually try to validate these experiences? Because I wanted something to go on, you know, some sort of, there had been experiments out there. I wanted to at least try and redo them or, you know, take them to the next level. And there was nothing. I had to start from scratch. There was nothing out there. So it was hard to believe I was the first to be doing this, but it seems that's what has happened. And so I started thinking of ways to, you know, try to validate these experiences. And I was getting interesting results, especially with the Spectre system, you know, the early Spectre system. This is before Chad came into the picture. So I was definitely getting some interesting results. But it was not enough for me to be able to publish my results and have it be valid enough to at least, you know, open the eyes to, you know, skeptics or even anybody in the scientific field. That was my goal. I knew I could publish all this to anybody in the ghost hunting field and they would, you know, believe it and accept it, and that'd be great, you know? And, but the thing is you really do have to try to, I guess, you know, make your experiments more credible. You know, what can you do that really does peel away some of that doubt? And that's what I was always trying to do. So luckily, I started thinking about Chad. I was like, you know, well, I had all these ideas of equipment that I wanted to be built and what needed to be in the paranormal field, which still hasn't been done. And so I thought, well, I'll just ask Chad, you know, and see what he thinks. And so, of course, I made that phone call to him and I told him, you know, what I was doing. And he was like, wow, this is really interesting. And so I said, well, you know, if you're open to it, I would love to at least have somebody with your knowledge to at least see what I'm doing and guide me. You know, I wasn't asking him to join the team because I knew he was a busy guy. I was just asking for at least somebody that I could turn to and say, you know, hey, Ross, do it this way if you want more credibility. That's what I wanted. You know, or maybe we could try this or, you know, do this. And so I was just looking for somebody to at least guide me in the right direction. And so I invited him out one weekend up to Northport where that young man had experienced that phenomena of constantly being groped. Mm-hmm. And so Chad came with us. I was trying some new experiments that weekend, the Carillion or Aura. Technology was still something new. We were still, you know, trying out. And so, you know, Chad was there to witness all this. And he actually was so fascinated with what we were doing that that's when he wanted to get more involved. Not only with helping, I know we were talking about Spectre system, but also, you know, to be a part of the team, you know? So he decided that weekend he was going to get naked and do an experiment as well. And I was floored by this. I really was. Yeah. I was not expecting it. I never asked him to be a part of this. I just wanted somebody to witness what was going on and to guide me in the right direction. But he wanted to get involved. He wanted to see what it is that these guys, these subjects that we were using that weekend were experiencing. And it made total sense, too, when he, you know, stepped up to the plate. It's just like, well, if I'm going to be involved in this, I want to know what it is that they're experiencing, what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. Because for him and his scientific mindset, you know, he has to have a better understanding of what he needs to use to help read that experience. And so I was just like, you want to get naked, go right ahead.
Yeah.
And he did. He got naked. He had experiences as well, so that was even better. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, if he hadn't had those experiences, then he would just second guess everybody else's experience.
All right,
so since he had those personal experiences as well, it inspired him to take it further. And so that's when we came together. He saw what I was using, the old Spectre system, and he realized we can make this better. And so that's when he took everything that I was using and put it into the Spectre 2.0 that we call it, and then advanced it by making it 360. So this is another amazing thing that is first to the paranormal field, is we now can track in a 360 environment. And this is the first time we are able to track phenomena. No one's done this. And so with that technology, with all these different sensors monitoring the, you know, they can actually see which direction things are coming at the system. And with that, we were able to track on two separate occasions when two subjects actually got physically attacked. We were able to see something come towards them at that moment and then leave.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is something. And so it just kind of went from there.
That on the documentary, we actually show the data,
right?
Without sets, you know, where it happened, and you actually did a little animated
right
thing on what happened.
Yeah, we really wanted to really get the data out there. We wanted to show that that was so important. It's one thing to talk about and say, oh yeah, or our equipment picked up that something came up and, you know, touched them and then went away. But that's just my word. And you have to take my word for it. But if we can show the data, then that makes it more credible. And so that was very important to us. So to have those numbers and to show the audience those numbers, this really did happen. Here it is. You know, that was really exciting for us. But the one of the other things that we learned by doing this research is that the equipment that ghost hunters are so dependent on is actually failing us, because the equipment is not fast enough or even strong enough or sensitive enough, I should say, to pick up a lot of the phenomena we were able to identify. So that goes to show too that there's a lot of situations where we could easily be missing out on a lot of this because our equipment's not quick enough, especially a lot of those EMF detectors that everybody's, you know, so gung-ho to have. They're just not quick enough to pick up that data because it happens so quick in some cases. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, you know, a snap or a bolt of lightning just, you know, striking a certain location. And to me, that kind of makes sense, because if you're thinking of free-form energy, it's going to be like lightning, you know, it's going to strike its, you know, victim and then and be out of there. And that's where we're starting to find a lot of the phenomena.
Yeah, I noticed that you use the spectrum in conjunction with the aura. And I think you also did the puppet.
The puppet, yeah, that's one of my experiments that I came up with.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things that, you know, I've always, you know, I've always said and taught my members that don't depend on one piece of equipment to validate your experience.
Right.
It's going to take multiple pieces of evidence to help support one experience. So, you know, if you're looking at, you know, 3 points of data, which is, you know, is very common in the scientific field, you know, you got to have those 3 points. So what three things happened at that exact moment? And so that's really important to, you know, get people in the mindset, if they're trying to be more scientific, is you got to have multiple points of data to, you know, at least validate that one encounter. And most ghost hunting groups are depending on just one. You know, they're just depending, oh, EMF detector went off, that's a ghost. Oh, there was a strange sound, that's a ghost. Well, there, you got to have more than just that if you're going to try and prove something.
All right.
So, you know, for me, having multiple experiments running at one time is also great too. Because, you know, sometimes that one experiment that you're hoping that will give you some readings may not trigger at that one time. But there could be other things happening at the same time. You know, just because we're running, you know, the spectra system, we can also still capture EVPs. You know, we can also still capture, you know, visual things happening as well. The strange sounds, just other things happening in the environment.
Yeah, I noticed that you're Brushy Mountain Penitentiary. That's where you had that, and I'll say actually, poor Nick.
Oh God, yes.
But
You know, it was definitely
you got back a second time. Well, he's got balls about.
and we've seen them, all right.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, one of the things I would like to go back and do Brushy Mountain again with Nick. Granted, his first time doing those experiments, it was amazing. He had something terrify him. Now, unfortunately, the first time I went there, I was very limited on the equipment that I had on hand. So I was not able to get the data I wanted to hopefully validate his experience. So for me, that was another reason why I wanted to go back. So, our first experiment with Nick was to go in and, take him to a place where there's been a lot of bad things that have happened in there, a lot of physical phenomena. And he went in, and this is the experiment that we called the bitch, because a lot of young men, when they go to prison, unfortunately, they do become, a prisoner's bitch. That's the lifestyle it is out there. And so we wanted him to be very, submissive, be very flirtatious, and see if you could coax something to come out and, take advantage of you. Because again, we're trying to prove touch. And something happened. I didn't see what he saw, but he experienced something twice. And in the documentary at the very end, we put the whole experiment there so people can watch that experiment unedited. But he had something happen that it terrified him that he went screaming out of that prison stark naked. He was screaming for me and his brother.
I see it. Yeah.
And so, here's an opportunity. Now that we're more prepared, I wanted to go back. And Nick didn't want to do it. He was like, no, I'm done with that place. I'm never going back. And I was able to convince him to go back because I wanted, if he had that experience, I wanted to know if he would have it again. And so we took him back to that, same, cell, and we did the same, type of experiments. And I told him to do the exact same thing, but this time it was different. And I think it was different because he was scared. He I don't think he really wanted to experience it again. And so, when you go back and you watch his first experiment, he was being very submissive. He was, trying to coax what was there. But the second time, if you really watch it, I think he wasn't being as submissive as he was before. I think that fear kept him from really opening up. So I think that's why we didn't get the exact same results as we did the first time, is because I think he was holding back because of his fear. So I'm hoping we can go back sometime in the near future and, try and redo that, or even try it with somebody else different, that won't have that built-in fear because they had something happen to them there. So I think that's one of the things that I learned from doing these experiments, just how different those two experiments were based off of just his mindset.
I will go to Brushy Mountain. That's in Tennessee, right? Okay, that's like 10 hours from here, I think. So
So
it's in a hell of a hole.
that's not a bad drive, 10 hours.
Yeah, well, I might check out your experiments. They're cool. So, wow. Yeah, I get once or twice a year, but I'm not a walker. I get around with I have a cerebral ataxia, so I get out get around with that. So,
Well,
I
I'm
think
glad it
what
doesn't hold you back. You can still do some
what.
amazing things.
Yeah, I'm doing the data. Yeah, I wish I got more. but it is pretty expensive. Yeah. I do.
It's not cheap anymore. You know, when I used to ghost hunt back in the day, you know, none of these places charged us. You know, we used to be able to get into a lot of these places for free. And now, you know, because of the popularity of ghost hunting and being that there's so many groups out there, that a lot of these places charge now. And, you know, a lot of times you can afford the fees that they charge for getting into some of these places.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it just keeps us that are serious about this. It keeps us from getting the data that we need, you know, to validate a lot of this stuff.
I know that my group, we had like, got 7 people go on most of them, so it breaks the cost up a little bit. Just because we want to go some well-known occasion. Look up it. You heard of Ainsdale House, right?
Uh-huh.
We were up there for a whole weekend. But with several of us, they broke it down, and then we got our own groceries and stuff. But it wasn't that bad then. No. But and that's oh my God, that's like craziness. But so that's how we did it. But I would be able to do that. Going to pay $1,000 or like whatever for it, and people think it's outrageous. But I know a lot of them want to help keep up with the historical, you know, upkeep and stuff. But I see doing a donation of some kind, but when they charge you $500-$600 a night. That's just not having them right. And,
you know, and they don't seem to understand a lot of times this comes out of our own pocket. It still comes out of my pocket, you know?
Childless pastors are crazy.
It is. It is unfortunate. And for me, it's harder to hit those higher numbers that they want to charge, you know, thousands of dollars to investigate sometimes for just one night, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, to make things like that happen, you kind of have to pull in more people to help, you know, bring in the funds. And of course, that means more people on the investigation site. And for me, I'm all about having a controlled environment. So,
right.
You know, the less amount of people, the better.
All right.
Because you don't have like making a lot of noise.
Yeah, 4 or 5 is enough for me. But usually,
right. That's good size. Yeah.
Usually, it was 3 or 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, large locations are different, but with your different brand, but noise contamination can be really bad in some places. So,
right, and some places are big enough you can have a much larger team. You know, I've done prisons and stuff like that, and you can definitely separate the team far enough that you're not contaminating each other's evidence.
Right,
that's the big thing too. Is you know making sure that if you're out there ghost hunting. That, you know, if you can hear the team walking around upstairs and talking upstairs, then that's contaminated evidence.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, you can't use any possible EVPs as proof of the paranormal because you can hear everybody else, you know?
Right. And there was a prison I went to in Trenton, New Jersey. It's Burlington County Prison. And we had a group of 8 there at the time, because we had guests. So what we did is the other people would go out and sit in their cars, and the other group would investigate, you know, as the one team all around.
And
So that was key from that. Yeah, so that helped. Wow. So, what places are you going next that you use your toy?
Oh my gosh, you know, I've been lucky enough that I've been able to travel all over the world and investigate some of the most amazing places, you know, prisons, castles throughout Europe, old hospitals, you know, places that everybody wants to go to. And I've been to every state. So it's hard for me when people ask, you know, is there any, you know, future plans or where I'd like to be for ghost hunting? And I don't like to say that I've done it all. I've been to some of the most amazing places and don't always have an experience. So of course I want to go back. Because as we know with ghost hunting, it's all about being at the right place, right time.
Oh yeah.
So, gosh. You know, I haven't been to Australia, so but I would love to go out there and, you know, check out some of their haunts. I don't have anything right now scheduled offhand. I am working on a project that hopefully I'll be able to announce within the next few months, that I'll hopefully be able to do some pretty cool investigations around the world. But yeah, it's tough right now for me to say, you know, is there anywhere I want to go or haven't been? I've had some amazing opportunities.
That's awesome. I always want to get over Ireland. There's some castles.
The Ireland? Oh, it's amazing out there. Yeah, I've done a few castles out there. Yes.
Yeah. There aren't we already a lot about. So, so are you going to take a child with you?
What's that?
You going to take Chad with you?
Chad? I would love to take Chad with me. Again, it just depends on his schedule. Yeah. I know he was just in Africa doing some big event out there, so it's not always easy to get him to join us. We definitely have plan way in advance. That's what we had to do with filming. I'd love to take him. He's great to have around. Definitely has some pretty interesting experiences since he's been around doing some of these experiments. Yeah. I think Chad would be great. It just hopefully works within the schedule, you know?
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome to investigate with him. He's with this, his scientific mind and...
Oh, yeah. You know, he's great. He really is.
That would be a fun time. So, yeah. Yeah.
It would have been nice to have him on the show with us, you know?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you if he pop in or not, tell him to join, but no, I mean, if he wants to come on sometime, I'm fine with that.
No, it'd be great. No, it's hard getting him on shows too, so that's why I tend to end up being the only one promoting the show. But no, he's got a lot of stuff going on. He's sure legit, you know, that's the thing too, is you can look him up online. He's a real scientist. He's got a really some cool projects that he's working on. You know, he works for the government, you know, working on energy and stuff like that. So, you know, I kind of have to hopefully, you know, reel him in every so often when he has some downtime.
All right, and energy is a big part of Chris' time.
No, yeah. And that's why it was great having him on this.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's great. Well, before we go, I want to ask people if they can go to Amazon.com and pick up a copy of his Parasounds. I took a copy today, and I just watched it last week or a few weeks back, but get a copy of it. It's awesome.
Thank you.
So I'll put a link in at the show for people to check it out.
Another thing that really helps us out is posting reviews. Mm-hmm. Like on Amazon or wherever you watched it. Because it just helps us get out there. It'll start getting, you know, tagged with other ghost hunting shows. Because right now, unfortunately, you know, we're the only ones promoting it. We don't have a big production company out there helping us promote and putting out trailers and all that stuff. So we kind of have to do all the work since it's our first one. You know, once it does really well, then they'll step up and help with the next one. So we're kind of doing the work on our own. So reviewing really does help.
And I will put Amazon on your Parasat site and your site.
Cool.
And Facebook. I'll put it on my Twitter sale.
Yeah, and you can also put a link to my Amazon, you know, bookstore as well. You know, all my books, if anybody's interested.
I'll do that. Yeah. It's on your site. I'll link to it. Yeah. Good. Awesome. Well, awesome how you're on tonight. I was kind of, you know, I'm kind of a little nervous because I never had,
you don't have to be nervous.
But a good time. I think everything worked out great. And I got to talk all about your parasense and your specter, which is awesome, by the way, and I hope that more people out there can look at that and maybe think of different ways also to, provide with the, scientific part of it, because I always want the other two. So instead of looking at the other.
So. Well, it's why it's out there. I want people to learn that some amazing things can be captured with science.
That's true. Yeah. Well, Ross, about ready to wrap it up.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Oh, God. It's my pleasure, believe me, having you on. So,
it's my pleasure, too.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ty. Happy hunting, everybody.
Be safe out there.
Thanks.